Hello, you're listening to Resonance FM. Well, you're not. There's something gone gravely wrong with the truth about my...
Dead air again.
This music wins.
Resonance, four people expect that.
But now, instead...
What?
Something not dead at all.
Uh-huh.
You hear the buzzing?
Live in the studio.
Zombies.
What buzzing?
Zombies.
Oh, it's buzzing.
Zombies from the city
Madge
of London.
Weinstein back there.
Stalking the...
See, we don't have these problems when they're pre-recorded, but today they're live, so we're allowed problems.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. Truth About Markets Live.
Oh, hang on, something's happening.
No, they're playing...
Oh, that's a jingle. Oh, we'll get, let's get rid of that.
Oh, that sounds good.
Right. This is Resonance FM.
Yeah.
Something has gone wrong with the last show, so sorry about that, but the new show is Truth About Markets, which will go very, very right. Won't
no,
it?
We should hope so, Robin.
Should we start then?
Mind yourself.
I think you should sing the jingle for the show, Robin, for...
Come back!
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da!
And cue.
All right, well, this is The Truth About Markets with Max and Stacey on Resonance 104.4 in London. Live in the studio, taking your tweets. If you want to tweet us, it's a hashtag TAM, I think, Stacey Herbert. Is that correct?
Hashtag TAM, or you could, of course, tweet us at Stacey Herbert. That's Stacyherbert. Follow me, too.
But what? Of course, Stacey and I have a massive Twitter war going, and I'm winning the Twitter wars at the moment, but... You're cheating, I noticed. Then I had to get an upgrade on my phone, so now I've been tweet picking. You see, it's an arms race, isn't it? Also with us is Madge Weinstein. Madge is in the house.
Hi.
Madge is here. And after this, we're heading over to the King's Lair. The old King's Head. For a live show, the stand-up rage show, Max Live Rage. Everyone's invited to that, I would imagine, right,
yes,
Stacey?
Well, please do understand that it's not in Camden. Max, of course, thinks everything in London is just in the same place.
It's all in Camden, isn't it?
It's not Camden Town.
Okay, we're live on Ustream, too.
All right, we're on Ustream also. Maybe. I think there's a link on maxkaiser.com.
Hopefully, Madge Weinstein on her Twitter account at Bloated Lesbian. She will be tweeting the location where you can find.
Yeah, I'm beating them both in my
Twitter. Better. That's better.
Wait, I can't even see Stacey.
Good.
Oh, Gavalt.
Oh, jeez. Okay, so tweet us right now and let us know what's going on. So, Max Kaiser, we've had a very eventful journey here to London Bridge.
Yeah.
And tell us about this conflict you got into with the taxi driver trying to pay the £25. We had a £20 note and a £5 note.
Well, I kind of inherited the conflict, actually, from Madge Weinstein. Always where Madge goes, conflict follows. But Madge tried to pay the taxi driver with a £5 note. But, of course, it's a £5 note printed in Scotland. And the taxi driver would not take this £5 note. And this opened up a discussion about, is Scotland part of the UK or not? You see? So we're arguing that the taxi driver was being a douche.
Right.
And that he should accept this £5 note. And then we went to Mickey's Fish and Chips down the street, which is a brand new restaurant here, open only 4 days. They had a lovely fish and chips platter. And we looked it up on Wikipedia, and it turns out that these Scottish pounds are only considered a medium of exchange if both parties are a party to the exchange. If they agree to accept it.
If both parties have to agree to accept it. Basically, if you could pass this off, if somebody's willing to take it, and of course, Madge Weinstein, obvious target. She's
I didn't know. I wanted a snack. I wanted a salami sandwich, and they had to take that, I guess.
Oh, Madge, you and your salami sandwiches.
It was late at night.
Yeah, but we got into an argument with this taxi driver yelling at him with our, American accent, saying, wait, isn't Scotland part of the United Kingdom? Don't they have the Queen up there and all that stuff?
And
he's like, yes, but we don't take their currency.
Right. And it brought up all kinds of interesting issues, like, first of all, the nature of paper money. Paper money is only good if people are willing to accept it as a medium of exchange. It's a fiat currency. And we just came out of a big conference talking about the difference between currency and money. Currency, this Scottish pound is currency. But it's not money. It's currency in that people will accept it if they both decide to accept it. There's a mutual agreement to accept this piece of paper and accept it as money. However, it's not inherently money. It's currency. Money is only something that would maintain its value over time. So the only thing that qualifies as money, when that definition, is gold and silver. And this is why gold and silver has held up as money, the only thing you can really consider money. And, of course, as the global situation continues to break apart, the global financial crisis, the Eurozone crisis, and, of course, you've got a lot of tension now and you've got a lot of conflict emerging suddenly between the UK and Germany about money, about currency, about the economy, about the fact that the UK says, well, we're not part of the euro, but the UK banks, of course, are loaded with euro-denominated debt that's unwinding and causing huge problems in the banking system in the UK. So they are part of the euro, whether they like it or not. Then in Germany today or yesterday, they said, well, you know, you're going to be part of the euro eventually. So they're in a kind of a threatening way. So you've got this all Germany versus everybody else mentality springing up, which we predicted would happen a few years ago. Exactly this, because Germany is a country that has a savings rate. Their entitlement programs, so-called, the health spending and the pension accounts are in surplus, unlike any other G20 nation that are in negative numbers. They've got a huge export market.
That's called deficit.
Deficit. They've got a huge export market. They're either the first or second biggest exporter in the world. They've got everything you would want in a superpower, except they're stuck in this thing called the euro. And, of course, I maintain that one of the byproducts of the creation of the euro going back to the year 2000 or so was that it allowed reunification of Germany, because up until then, that would not have happened due to the effects of World War II. But now, under the euro, the belief was that, well, we can let the East and West Germany reunify, but it'll be within the context of the euro. Now the euro is splitting apart. Suddenly, Germany is stretching, you know, its wings and you know, the Teutonic wings, the wings of the German eagle are spreading. Is this a good thing or a bad thing, Stacey Herbert?
Well, I'm going to go into that, but first I have an answer in a tweet, but first I'm going to read one tweet from somebody sent a hashtag TAM, and it is, Het verkoofheid virus heeft mij sinds Gico gisterwond en her griep.
Yes.
I don't know what that
means. Mine itches too.
I think that was something to do with a knockwurst order that they're sending back to the kitchen for to be prepared again.
Well, then the other one is from Carly Pants on Twitter. And apparently there's a Bredageddon going on in Ireland. And this has a lot to do with this whole euro situation you're talking about, Max. Because, of course, we have austerity measures being imposed on the good Irish people. And Carly Pants writes, Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert, Irish government to tax any bread, including bagels, not considered bread-like enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to the Irish Times story. Bagels and garlic bread set for sharp price rise as VAT rules change. The price of bagels, croissants, garlic bread, and a range of other similar products is likely to increase significantly in the weeks ahead after Revenue decided they were not sufficiently bread-like to be exempt from VAT. The move will see the products fall into the tax net for the first time and may lead to them increasing in price by as much as 13.5% with almost immediate effect.
Our bagels bread. Now, is it leavened bread or an unleavened? Now, a matzah, of course, is an unleavened substance. You might say it's not bread, but bagel?
Are we talking about yeast?
Well, yes, we're talking about yeast. You are over there at yeastradio.com. You would know a lot about yeast.
Well, there's an infestation.
Plus, you're a bloated Jewish lesbian, so you should know about bagels.
I do, but I'm also trying to get this blank Ustream stream to work, and I keep stopping, and now I'm like, I have a new.
Okay, well, but this does, of course, bring us back to the French Revolution, of course, Marie Antoinette defined brioche as bread, so she considered that bread enough for her peasants. So here they're saying bagels are not bread. Therefore, they get taxed at 13.5% croissants. This could be a trade war going on between French and Jewish people.
As you point out, bread is a very sensitive issue. Going back to the French Revolution, it was all about bread. And, of course, the Arab Spring and what happened in Cairo was focused a lot on bread and the price of bread inflating. As part of the money printing that's gone on and the financial skullduggery that's been in place for many years. But over the past 5 to 10 years, of course, the financial markets, the speculators, given all of the free money that has come vis-a-vis the bailouts, instead of re-lending that money into the economy that would generate real GDP growth, instead, they've been using it to speculate in the commodity markets. And if you remember, oil got to $147 a barrel, and there was a huge spike in commodity prices around the world. And the price of bread and the price of sustaining one's life in terms of the cost of food in Egypt got to that magic 40% level. Another every time or any time in an economy where the cost of food is 40% of income, you have, generally speaking, a revolution. In the U.S., it's roughly 12% of income. And, of course, the U.S. benefits from subsidies, massive subsidies that come many different ways. The corn industry in the U.S., of course, is subsidized and puts African farmers and European farmers at risk, but mostly African corn growers. But so you have this 12% of income for food, which it...
I think you were talking about the cotton growers, right?
Could be. Oh, well, they have... remember, Bob Geldof was down in Africa with a big bag of genetically modified, subsidized American corn. And you're saying, isn't George W. Bush great? Except for the subsidies, except for the genetically modified part, except for the thrown election part and the rigged markets, Bob, I'd have to agree with you there. But factoring in all these other things, I'd have to say you're completely off base and doing more damage than good. Of course, guys like Geldof don't know anything about economics, so they just...
I'm just looking at you. I looked over at Max Kaiser, and he freaked out. See, you never...
scared me.
He's like a superstar. You know, when you work in Hollywood, this is the thing. You're not allowed to walk on the set and look at any A-list actor because they freak out. They get their agents and their managers onto the
producers. But was it just a
producers.
Liquor? Was it more of something else?
I went like this. I went like...
Oh, they did it again! Oh, my God. Well, anyway, so food is, when it gets to that 40% level, as it did in Egypt, then you have a revolution. Tunis, of course, in Tunisia, similar situation. In Athens now, it's rising. Now, in Ireland, you know, food is part of that whole history, of course, going back to the potato famine, et cetera. So food and foodstuffs are part of the history, an intricate part of the history there. And we were just in Ireland. We've been in Ireland several times. The people there are, I think, there's a growing sense that the austerity measures are going to last for many, many years. The bankers, whether it's Sean Quinn or Sean Fitzpatrick, related to the Anglo-Irish deal, when we were there...
Everybody's named Sean.
Yeah, let's say there's an inflation in the name Sean.
There was some Colons, I think.
Yeah.
There was some Colons.
And they
Sean
got...
Colon?
There was Colons.
Oh, Colin, I never... Colin, you mean
yes.
Colin. Colin.
I thought it was Colin, you know.
You know, in Ireland, of course, the one thing I did notice is that a lot of the fans of the Kaiser Report and the people who... The guys who came out and were the most hardcore, they were like 90-something. Or maybe they're just like 20-year-olds that had a hard life. But they looked 90 to me.
There are a lot of Colins there. They need a colonoscopy for sure to try to get, you know,
you
where that's coming from. But the Anglo-Irish situation, when we were there, Anglo-Irish doesn't even exist anymore. They've been rechristened with some acronym like United Republic Banking of Fraud or something. But they made a 750 euro bond payment on an unsecured bond. The word unsecured should give you the tip-off here. It's unsecured. That means that the person making the loan made so unsecured, which means that if the loanee cannot pay, that's tough cookies on the person making the loan. So by definition, in the actual prospectus, in the debenture of the bond as it's circulating within the financial defraudosphere, it says right there, if you can't make the payments, you know, you're not on the hook. And yet, for some reason, the Irish government, with gun to head from IMF and the Troika, made that payment, and that's a lot, 750 million euros in an economy like Ireland, which is not even a $120 billion economy. I mean, it's not even, it's probably, what, one-tenth the size of the UK in terms of GDP. You know, that's a significant amount of money, and it's causing real problems. Real people are, you know, now with the food prices going up, this whole focaccia bagel spread arbitrage with the leavened, and then the unleavened, they're going to be the raspberry, and pretty soon it's going to be, this is not the right Marmite. You need the Marmite without the yeast, and it's too much yeast, and it's on the other side. Oh, yeah. Got to be taxed more. It's going to cost you this. And, you know, Jackie Mason aside, the people are really starting to enter a period of wanting to emigrate again. They're leaving the country. Why stay in this frickin' country? Hello?
Well, what about this? That was Ireland. What about the UK? Because, of course, the UK is... Oh, I'm sorry, England. We'll only talk about England, because anytime you talk about the UK, you get in trouble, because apparently Scotland's only part... of the UK. Apparently, none of it actually counts.
Yeah, what a bunch of wankers. You say, oh, here I am in England. And they go, no, you mean the United Kingdom. I'm like, okay, here we are in the United Kingdom. And they go, no, not Scotland. Yeah, but Scotland's part of the United Kingdom. No, not really. But call us the United Kingdom, or unless we want you to call us England. If it's a football match and it's some footballer, well, we like the St. George Cross. But other than that, call us the United Kingdom.
Just send us their oil, and we don't take their currency, though, other than their oil.
Yeah.
Which, so, of course. Yeah. But I wanted to bring up this QE, quantitative easing. Apparently, it's going to be out once again. I guess we'd be on QE3. And also announced on Friday was that the government is going to cut benefits, not for the retired, but just for the young people, the unemployed, the disabled. And they're going to cut it by not linking it to inflation anymore. They're just going to say, oops, we're going to break that because inflation was 5.25%. And they said, oh, we can't afford that.
Right. See, linking the raises to inflation has always been a scam, because inflation has always been understated due to the redefinition of the consumer price index that goes into defining what is inflation. And every 5 years, they adjust the basket of goods in the index so that it looks like there's less inflation, because they don't want to pay those raises to civil servants. But there's so much inflation now, they've run out of these hedonic adjustments. They've run out of tricks. So inflation's running through the roof. So now they just break the social contract and say, oh, you know what? We're just not going to tie it to inflation at all. You know, when I was there in London, a couple of years ago, I was marching with the cops. They were out in the street looking for a pay raise, and they're trying to match their raise and pay to inflation. And I said, look, buddy, copper, you're making a big mistake. You got to tie your wages to money supply growth. Money supply growth was up, 15%, 16%. That's how much money you need to have your wages increase. Otherwise, net-net, at the end of the year, you're going to be a loser. Don't buy into the canard of CPI and the official inflation numbers. They're completely cooked to make it you the loser in that equation.
Yeah, but it's also paying for all the banking crime going on down there at in the city of London. And this is their sort of austerity. Most people don't see it as austerity, even though it's outright inflation. Even the amount they're counting, which is 5.25%, and you know that's a fraction of what it really is.
Yeah, that still understates the true rate of inflation. And to get the true rate of what's really going on, I mean, obviously, look at the price of precious metals hitting new all-time highs in pound terms. But this phrase, quantitative easing, I think it's an interesting one. A couple of headlines attracted my attention. First of all, you have to understand what quantitative easing is. Quantitative easing means that the Bank of England is forcing savers, people who have money in a savings account or a pension account, forcing them at the point of a gun of the government to subsidize the speculators. In other words, instead of getting the 5% return on your savings that you would get if the government were not interfering with the markets and interrupting the flow of the markets by artificially imposing these quantitative easing, this jackbooted stomp down of interest rates, you would be getting 4 or 5% in your savings account. And if you're living on a pension account, I mean, that's what you planned on 5 or 6 years ago or 10 years ago. That's what all the actuarial tables said was going to be the case. That's what the insurance industry sold you, and they sold you that annuity that they could get 5 to 8% on that annuity, and that's what you anticipated to be living on. Now you're getting half of 1%, and that's an enormous, 90, 95% less than you thought you were getting. So obviously that's almost getting nothing of what you thought you were getting. And why are they doing this? Because they need to keep interest rates at near 0%, because that's what the speculators demand. The speculators don't want to pay anything for the money they're borrowing. They don't want to pay for any of the mistakes that they make. So they're not charged any money to borrow money at 0% or less than 0%.
Well, let's look at the Bank of England website. You can all go there, bankofengland.co.uk. On their front page, it says monetary policy. The bank sets interest rates to keep inflation low to preserve the value of your money. You click on through it, quantitative easing explained, putting more money into the economy. In March 2008, the Monetary Policy Committee announced that in addition to setting bank rate at 0.5%, it would start to inject money directly into the economy in order to meet the inflation target. The instrument, what the inflation target is now 5.25%, is that what they're saying? The instrument of monetary policy shifted towards the quantity of money provided rather than its price, but the objective of policy is unchanged, to meet the inflation target of 2%. On the CPI measure of consumer prices.
Yeah.
So why are they announcing a QE3? They're well past their target. Do they think QE3 will lower inflation?
They believe that QE3 will lower inflation. but they're absolutely wrong. But let's go to this next headline, which kind of gives you an insight into the psychosis. Sir Mervyn King, when asked about, do you expect another credit crunch? He said, quote, I can't even predict tomorrow.
Okay, well.
Now, this is important because the quantitative easing program that they're initiating is based on a theory or a model of economics that says that when the government buys government bonds and injects that cash into the economy, that you're going to have a beneficial impact in the economy as defined by our definition of economy and as defined by our model. And of course, if you have a model, that means that you can predict how the model will go. That means you have a confidence that you can predict how the economy will go forward. But that would only work if the economy were based on something that would be similar to one of the hard sciences, like physics or chemistry. You know, if you put these two chemicals together, it'll create an explosion. It'll happen today. It'll happen tomorrow. I can predict that if I put these two chemicals together tomorrow, it'll result in the same chemical reaction. However, if I put this person in a room with this other person and ask them to raise a chicken farm, the results are completely unpredictable because you can't predict the outcome of how people behave. And economics is a soft science. It tries to quantify how people behave, but there is no model that gives you predictable results. Mervyn King said it himself, I can't even predict tomorrow. That's correct. But why, therefore, is he engaging in quantitative easing, which is a theory that is based on a rational economics agents, us, you, the consumer, that telegraphs this idea of predictability? Why does he mix the two? Because he's psychotic. The models that he has that he's working with, by definition, can't work because you can't predict how someone's going to behave. It's impossible to make that prediction. He says himself, I can't make that prediction. And yet he governs the entire state of the nation based on an economic theory that mandates that he knows how to predict the future. There's a total disconnect between what he says is coming out of his mouth and actually how the economy works. He's an institutionalized lying sack of douche.
Max Kaiser, you have a tweet from Flameproof Moth, which of course is formerly known as Boycott Coca-Cola Experience, and he says, sing us a song, Max Kaiser, on Truth About Markets.
Institutionalized douche.
Wow.
That's the name of my song.
Well,
ID. How about launching ID3? Sir Mervyn Putz. The guy's a terrorist, okay? He's part of the terrorist organization, you know. And the IRA, by the way, they're reconstituting themselves up in the north of Northern Ireland, and they're rallying around the fact that these banksters are the true enemy. Now, how did this all happen? Because nobody stood up to the banksters. There's no regulation. There's nobody standing up to the thievery and larceny going on in the sector. There's no regulation. Serious Fraud Office, no regulation whatsoever. Financial Services Authority, no regulation whatsoever. So you're opening the door to this other, thing to happen. My solution, of course, I'm going up there myself.
Well, that's what always happens. You know, look at when in the ghetto, what happens in the ghetto? It's vigilante justice. It's gangsters. It's mafia that sort of develops if there's no rule of law.
Well, let's look at what's really going on behind the scenes now. Now, in the UK, here's a headline from the Financial Times. Banks play war games. So what we're finding out is that in the U.S., whether it's the Pentagon or in the U.K., the bankers and the military are getting together and they're staging internal war games, financial war games, assuming that the weapons of mass financial destruction, the derivatives, can be weaponized and used as ways to attack other countries. In the case of Greece, for example, they were clearly attacked with credit default swaps that you can print or counterfeit without any end. You know, every bailout package that was announced by the government, Wall Street simply printed 10 times that amount in credit default swaps and sold the country down to the bonds being unsustainable. And then the rating agencies that are in on the collusion kept lowering the rating of the country's debt. And now the country is run by an unelected banker put in place by the IMF and Goldman Sachs. Same thing in Italy. It's now being run by an unelected banker put in place by Goldman Sachs and Wall Street. Same thing is going to happen in Spain. And, England arguably is already run by banksters. I mean, it's more than 50% of GDP in London is tied to financial terrorism, which they are openly in support of, and something like the Tobin tax, a 1% tax on financial transactions that might cut into the terrorism that is the basis of the UK economy, and by the UK I mean including Scotland and Wales. they don't want to put in that Tobin tax. You know, meanwhile they're entered into a war of words with frickin' Germany. You know, as I said at the top of the show, Germany is a superpower. They've got exports, they've got savings, they've got 3,000 tons of gold. The UK has 300 tons of gold because Gordon Brown sold 300, half the gold of the UK when he was, Exchequer.
Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Right. He sold 300 tons of the UK gold, half the gold supply at the worst price of decades. And because he believes in the magic pixie dust of the neoliberal model that was going to inflate the Ponzi scheme for perpetuity. And then, of course, that came crashing down in 2007. And now you've got austerity measures in the UK. And now you've got rioters in London torching the place.
Are you talking about the bankers again?
No, I'm not, dear. I'm talking about the people who are out in the council estates who have been financially disadvantaged through the being victimized by these weapons of mass financial destruction. They were out in the street rioting, and they were vilified in the House of Commons, and everybody and Tony Blair peeped up and like, this is some kind of moral. It's not a moral failing of the country. It's a problem of law and order. You know, my point is, you know, you're missing a beat here. Davey boy, you know, just give all these riders a broker's license and a banker's license and put them behind a desk and they can increase the GDP of your country, you know, substantially, hundreds and hundreds of percentile because they've proven their ability to loot, which is all you've got at these banks in the City of London. They've got a proven track record of looting. Okay, so why not just empower your new generation of looters?
Well, by the way, you know, if you go to maxkaiser.com, you can follow the link to the Ustream, the live stream of the show, and you could see the pornographic version of the show.
We have 30 live viewers now. Our very first stream that is barely even working.
Hi there, viewers. Are they able to leave a comment there and say what
they're...
There's
a chat room here. I'm not sure if it's working, but I believe if they... if somebody's in the chat room, type something so we can see if it's showing up here, and then you can say nasty things.
Type Bredageddon. Type Bredageddon.
Speaking of Bredageddon.
Well.
Max is on the Bredageddon.
Speaking of Bredageddon.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us, Max.
Max is on a roll today.
Short of cash for lunch, how about a toast sandwich?
Oh, yes.
Okay, this was in the UK. Apparently during the Victorian era, they came up with the most economic sandwich in the history of the kingdom. It's a toast sandwich. It's two slices of bread surrounding toast, and the toast is buttered with some salt and pepper.
What?
And the cost of this toast sandwich is 7p. It's the most economic lunch in Britain. So it says times are hard, but they may have to get harder before the austerity sandwich, which scientists have acclaimed as the cheapest lunch in Britain. It becomes a hit. It consists of two slices of bread surrounded by a filling of another slice of bread. Although the middle slice is toasted, sprinkled with salt and pepper and a dash of butter, it's hard to see many mouths watering at the prospect. The recipe, as such, was originally devised by the renowned Victorian food writer Mrs. Beaton in 1861, who needed to get beaten severely with a clue stick. But even now, it costs only 7.5p to make each sandwich, earning it a Royal Society of Chemistry's accolade as the country's most economic lunch.
Yummy.
Well, for our American viewers out there, 7p, we must explain, is 10 cents.
Here's a question, Max.
Okay.
In your opinions, so I guess it's both of you, what is the end game and the timeline for the Euro crisis?
Who's asking that?
Kilroy Streams.
Kilroy Streams.
Uh-huh.
Okay, what's the timeline? Well, we just learned, didn't we? What was the lesson number one Max gave you at the top of the show? You can't predict the future. Right?
Well, the timeline, you know, this question is it always comes up. Like, well, when should I wake up? Because right now I've just smoked a bong, and I want to know if Armageddon's going to come in the next 20 minutes. Because if it does, then maybe I should have a Red Bull.
Well,
I'm not sure. Should I take a Red Bull now or should I smoke another bong? You know, let me know, because otherwise I don't want to know.
I think for Max, it's Almageddon because he eats lots of almonds.
Actually, almonds. Actually, you know, speaking of food, I guess, you know, you grow food in the field sometimes, or at least we used to. I know you can grow it in a petri dish these days. But Madge Weinstein has a story about what happens when you get the U.S.-style healthcare system. And one NHS hospital has just been privatized, presumably to one U.S. corporation, as all corporations...
What was the story? I forgot.
You talk about potato bugs.
Oh, you want to hear about tater bugs. Well, yes, a lot of people don't know what tater bugs are. But and Max and Stacy didn't, so I know that they don't.
Madge is right here.
I'm here behind. Right off. Yeah, next to. I just don't have all my makeup on, so I'm trying to stay off camera. But you know, Max and Stacy know so much about the economics and finance. I felt so happy because I knew something they didn't, which is tater bugs. Now, a lot of women in the South used to, and they still are very poor, but have no health care, and they have babies, and they don't have the luxury of. You know, in America, we don't have time off for anything. You work every day and then you die. And they, yeah. So the ladies, when they have babies, before they die, they have to work again. So they go back to work in the fields. And this is, you know, more often the case when they were, you know, when they were black and still, you know, on plantations. I know they're still black, but I don't know if they still do plantations or not.
We never know in America.
But so they would, you know, they would, their uteruses would fall out from working so much after the baby. So your uterus falls out, you have no health care. What do? You have to stick a potato in your vagina to hold your uterus back, to hold the uterus up in there, so it doesn't just fall out while you're picking cotton.
Is that a British accent?
Yes.
Or a Scottish one?
It's Branglish. It's my new... I'm trying to be... what's that word they use when you're posh? I'm trying to be posh, because I know they care about your accent here. So what these women would do is they would find a potato and put it in their vagina, hold their uterus up. Well, then the potato gets infested with bugs, so hence tater bugs. So it's like vaginal bugs. I hope that's okay.
Robin, are you still going to drink the
resonance?
I've learned so much today.
Is that okay on the radio to talk about tater bugs?
Oh, what the hell? Carry on. I'll be over here if you need me.
But look what your shirt says. You can't say that on the radio.
Yeah, but I'm not saying it. I'm just wearing it. I wore it specifically today because I couldn't wear it to my actual job. Uh-huh. But here, we're kind of liberal.
Which is where?
You can't say.
It's a secret. I'm moonlighting.
It's a secret. They're all like secret agents here at Resonance 104.4 FM. But Max Kaiser, now you have the floor. But wave to the people out there on Ustream, by the way. They want to know.
Hello, people.
We have questions online asking, Liar Politicians asks if it's cold in the studio because they notice that you have a scarf on. And I said, no, Max is just a fashion victim.
Well, you know, crazy people are always, if you notice, crazy people in the street always wear lots of extra clothing when it's hot out. That's all I finished saying.
Max laughed.
Resonance austerity measures as well.
Wait. This is a momentous occasion at this point in time because Max just laughed hard at one of my jokes. I think he was laughing at me because I said something and he laughed. He usually doesn't laugh at my jokes.
But you were reading somebody else's thing. Does that really count as you?
We have 55... 60 now. We're going
crazy. Wow, we're going crazy.
No, 59. Someone just left.
59.
I can't call them when I would normally call them because it's the radio.
Yeah, we would call you all sorts of bad names for leaving and abandoning us. Anyway, so Max Kaiser, what do you have to say? I see you have a nice little Wikipedia printout there from... So
the tater bugs. This was part of the discussion on the toast sandwich.
Mm. Was it?
Yeah. And how during recessions and depressions,
the great tater bug famine.
What it's like to be a peasant. We have to remember what it's like to be a peasant because these are neo-feudal times. I know Max and I have talked about that for a while on this show right here on Resonance 104.4 FM that we're in neo-feudal times. But now... there's actually no hiding it.
No, I mean, that's what the thing in the U.S. in particular, people are very reluctant to admit that they've been, you know, relegated back to peasants.
Yeah.
But that's, in fact, what has happened. You know, you do have, 50 million people on food stamps, and over 150 million people are at or below the official poverty line. So 50% of the country is basically... in the peasant class, and then the remaining 50% is barely above the peasant class.
Yeah, that's right, Max.
So, speaking of peasants, I mean, you know, going back to 1381 here in the UK, of course, you had the Peasants' Revolt, which is an interesting chapter in UK history, because this was, you know, considered the last great moment, possibly, of replacing the monarchy, and having something like a constitution. But unfortunately, the king at that time, I guess it was Richard II, ended up beheading a lot of people.
Yeah, once I met him at Smithfield, and then they decided to negotiate with him. It's the Peasants' Revolt. Mm-hmm. The Great Rising of 1381 was one of a number of popular revolts in the late medieval Europe and is a major event in the history of England. The revolt came to be seen as a mark of the beginning of the end of serfdom in medieval England, although the result itself was a failure. But it was the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Well, do you think the Occupy Wall Street stuff is the beginning of the end? Is this the beginning of the peasants' revolt to our latest serfdom? Because we are debt serfs, aren't we?
Well, they had the wind of the Black Plague behind them.
That's true.
Their sails as peasants. Because half of the population got wiped out due to plague-related illness. And so they had negotiating bargaining power suddenly at the Lord's manor. So they began to charge for their services because half of them had been dead.
That's right. So that's what they say here, the poll tax. The revolt was precipitated by King Richard II's heavy-handed attempts to enforce the third medieval poll tax, first levied in 1377, supposedly to finance military campaigns overseas. But they're saying it was actually, he was just following on the footsteps of here, labor shortage. The Black Death that ravaged England in 1348 to 1350 had greatly reduced the labor force, and consequently, the surviving laborers could demand higher wages and fewer hours of work. Some asked for their freedom. They often got what they asked for. The lords of the manors were desperate for people to farm their land and tend their animals. Then in 1351, King Edward III summoned Parliament to pass the Statute of Laborers. See, this is historically, over and over, the monarchs, the rulers of the world, do not want you to have freedom. The statute attempted to curb the demands for better terms of employment by pegging wages to pre-plague levels.
We want post-plague levels.
Well, this is what this inflation, this quantitative easing, is the modern equivalent of pegging us to pre-plague levels. The plague of quantitative easing.
The plague of banker fraud.
The plague of banker fraud.
What's that? Who's that?
What, Madge?
Somebody just typed Brad Geddon just now.
Well, that's a delayed response.
That's a kind of a delayed reaction, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's probably somebody in shortage.
The pestules are just showing up. They have their mom's basement. Black plague has just hit that household right now, so there's hope. There's hope for the bargaining power of that neighborhood suddenly going up because this guy's on his way out.
Or it could just be a slow motion
Throw out your dead.
I have a question about this peasant revolt. Now, this was in
81.
1381, and they still have a monarchy. They still have a queen. What kind of hope does America have? We haven't even had a revolt yet.
We have a queen in the studio with us.
Got a couple. I mean, oops. I'm a lesbian, so it doesn't count.
Right. Well, America had a revolt back in the 18th century, and they created a constitution. And then over the last 25 years, everything in the Constitution has been written over with these new laws, and signing orders by the dictator, who can simply do whatever he wants and declare wars without Congress. He can impose taxes without any referendums. He can do anything he wants. There's a dictator in the White House. There's no longer representational government. It's no longer democracy. So.
Yeah, but he's black.
Yeah, but Max, but speaking of war, and you brought up war before, that another big news item this week in the UK was this military-industrial complex, and it goes hand-in-hand with the financial-industrial complex, of course. And it turns out, I think it was £600 million that was supposed to be spent on equipment. I remember England is engaged in wars all over. I'm using England because I'm not allowed to use the UK anymore. So England is engaged in wars in Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, who knows where else, right? The £600 million was supposed to be spent on equipment. Lo and behold, it turned out it just was all transferred to consultants.
Right. That's right.
This is a part of that same racket. All the bailout stuff is the same rackets.
That's right.
Some questions.
Complete racketeering. Racketeering, market manipulation, insider trading, resulting in loss of financial integrity and the imposition of illegal financial austerity, resulting in street riots, which are being vilified as perpetrated by some underclass that are being scapegoated before they're shuffled down the train tracks to Treblinka or some other area. What was the question?
Listen, Mike Maloney's dad liberated Treblinka. I learned that today.
Well,
so we have some questions coming up on there. You know, I really believe most of these people on Ustream are writing from Shoreditch, and they have to put down that bong.
They just got a new shipment of heroin in Shoreditch, so these people are going to be strung out pretty badly.
How many blocks does this station go?
Should I mix lye with heroin? Yeah, absolutely. And follow that with a bourbon chaser, and you should be feeling great in no time.
Well, somebody asked, why you hate Kyle Bass?
Kyle Bass? Well, first of all, I was mispronouncing his name for about 6 months. I thought it was Kylie Bass.
He said because he's pro gold. I don't know. I've never heard you hate on Kyle Bass.
I've never actually spoken on this guy. I think I mispronounced his name once. I thought he was one of the members of the Bass family.
I think he was one of the Spice Girls.
Yeah, he was a Spice Girl. Then he was, I thought, a member of the Bass family from Texas. And then it turns out that he's not. He's some other guy named Bass. And if you've ever seen Fishing with John, then you know the bass fishing.
Somebody just wrote on our Ustream. Our Ustream is the place to go. You have to go to maxkaiser.com follow the link to our Ustream. Somebody just wrote that. Did you hear that? Did you hear that? That was my skull. I'm so wasted. Madge Weinstein's prolapse is falling out all over the place. She's laughing so hard. Oh, her potato just fell out.
That's what's so funny, because I did hear it. It must be somebody very close. How long is how many watts is this station? Like three?
Not quite enough.
It's like only up the block.
That's right.
It's one block radius.
We can all hear it perfectly well. So.
Anyway,
they got it nice and clear down at Mickey's Fish and Chips, by the way. Just opened up down the street, 4 days up and operating. They got a lovely selection of fish and chips down at Mickey's Fish and Chips.
That was a quote from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I remember that was it. Anyway, so
Mr.
Max,
Hand, Mr.
Max,
Hand,
you're the Kaiser in a world,
Mr.
of
Spicoli.
Mr. Spicoli, yes, all of us crazy
what
peasants here.
Sitting on this cable, it's just driving me.
It's a potato.
Yeah, you've been sitting on it the whole show, and
was
you've been squirming around. Are you pulling that out of your sphincter or what?
It smells.
There's like a 30-length cord appearing out of your buttocks. And I'm wondering, is that what prolapse is all about?
This is an advanced stage of worms.
I'll say.
If wow. You could see what Madge just pulled out of there.
How did you get all that
in
there?
I can put it on the Ustream for the audience.
Look at all that just came out of Madge's behind.
Well, and my vagina. It's a combination of two holds.
Wow. Okay. Well, Madge, why don't we turn to you for a second, and can you read some of those things coming in on Ustream?
Oh, my. I got halfway up the M11 the other day. No, that was no euphemism. Are we in inflation, deflation, stagflation, or biflation?
This is the question of our day. This is
and then the
defining
next question,
question
after that, if you can handle two, is my dad is a TV repairman. He has this awesome set of tools. We can fix this. I don't know if that was a question.
His dad's a tool?
Yeah.
Yeah. Inflation, deflation, biflation, stagflation.
Yeah.
Well, I think
biflation.
You know, I think that all of those definitions predate the level of fraud that we're seeing in the system, the systemic fraud that we're seeing. It doesn't make any sense to try to quantify this in terms of inflation or deflation or stagflation or biflation when you've got a new paradigm shift in the level of fraud. You know. The system is so utterly corrupt, from the central bank, the investment banks, the rating agencies, governments, the money managers, the hedge fund managers, the sovereign managers, it's the sovereign wealth fund managers. So it's like saying that, well, somebody just robbed my house. Is that inflation or deflation? In other words, they stole all my money.
Right.
So is that inflation? Or am I being deflation? You know, no, you just got robbed. You know, so I think that's the main point. There's been a crime here. Let's talk about the crime scene, and then we'll talk about macroeconomics. But first, you have to accept the fact that you're being unmercifully, preyed upon by fraudsters.
So the answer to your question, temporalist, is it doesn't matter.
Well, you're looking at the wrong place here. I mean, because they're of the opinion that, well, we have to decide whether it's inflation or deflation because the right policy mix will get us on the right track. No, that's not right. You're being robbed, and you need to either stab the guy or put him in jail.
Nat wants to
know. I'm not trying to climb into the picture. I'm controlling the
Ustream.
People
are accusing Madge of trying to climb into the picture.
I'm controlling the Ustream. I have to. If I wanted to be in the picture, I would turn the thing.
Max, on Twitter, Nelson Nutella wants to know.
I love Nutella. It's
me
so
too. It's so great.
Wants
it's
to
like
know.
Noisettes and chocolate.
Wants to know if Schwing Schwing is copywritten. Can I stop saying up the shawarma then?
Oh, that's a good question.
Up the shawarma is a Mideast expression which has been around for more than the copyright law pertains to, so it's in the public domain.
But what about Schwing Schwing?
Schwing Schwing, yes. This is I've released that under a Creative Commons copyright. So everyone has had use of this completely without any commercial problems, except I need accreditation.
What about your Twitter?
You need accreditation.
Accreditation. In other words, if you say Schwing Schwing, you must say Schwing Schwing. You know,
Accreditation. Isn't that like
you get the credit?
You get the credit.
Yeah,
okay.
You get the credit. You get the accreditation.
Okay.
There's something here a lot in Hollywood, you know.
How many people are on?
No money. 30, okay. Well, I'll take the accreditation.
86.
86,000 yeah. people are now watching this live on Ustream. Yeah. That's pretty amazing.
86, how many?
Max, did 86. You want to talk about your Twitterist?
86.
You just got your Twitterist yesterday. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I just got my iPhone 4S with direct Twitterist access, and I'm making tweets.
This is what he had for about 10 years previously.
7 years.
It barely
Samsung.
Works anymore.
It works.
That's what he used with
well.
His guys for guys with iPhone picture.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, the charge lasts longer. I only had to charge it once a week. This iPhone Twitterist, I got to charge every 6 hours.
Yeah, but I told you, you can't leave the camera on. You keep leaving the
Even
camera
Even with the camera off. It's a battery whore.
It's a bad Twitterist, but it's hard.
Yeah. You know, this is like having a cell phone back 10 years ago where, you know, you had to always look for a charger. Where's a charger? Where's a charger? You know, but now the same thing for these iPhones.
So let's talk about...
Do you really need all that
let's
processing?
Let's go back to that Peasants' Revolt, because I like this part. I just caught this part of the corner of my eye. Storming the Tower of London. At the same time, a group of rebels stormed the Tower of London and summarily executed those hiding there, including the Lord Chancellor and the Lord Treasurer.
Mm.
The Savoy Palace of the King's uncle, John of Gaunt, was one of the London buildings destroyed by the rioters. Then, of course... They went to Smithfield.
Bum, bum, bum.
In the Wat Tyler rode ahead to talk to the king and his party. Tyler, it is alleged by the king's chroniclers, behaved most belligerently and dismounted his horse and called for a drink most rudely. This is what they do during all peasant revolts. Do you notice that about the Occupy Wall Street people? They're dirty, they're smelly, they're drunk, they're fornicating, they're rapists.
Mm.
In the ensuing dispute, Tyler supposedly, they can say that now because we're far enough into the future. Normally in the UK they would say allegedly because of the libel laws here. Tyler supposedly drew his dagger and William Walworth, the Lord Mayor of London, drew his sword and attacked Tyler, mortally wounding him in the neck. Sir John Cavendish, one of the king's knights, drew his sword and ran it through Tyler's stomach, killing him almost instantly. Then the rest were killed.
Okay, here's a question that's more reasonable than...
Oh, here's a good question. I can see it.
Wow. I can't get my Twitter is hard.
Silver boycotting... Buying silver... Oops. What do you... Besides buying silver, boycotting Coke, and transferring deposits out of big banks, what else can I do? They always want more locally. As,
Think for
as,
yourself is what you can do.
What else can I do locally as a peasant to... Madge, I can't see that.
Madge,
you have to
Why
go to more bring more risk to the banks occupying my city. What else could I do to bring risk to the banks occupying my city?
Do it
locally. So, well, that fits with the genetically modified foods and all that kind of stuff we were just talking about.
I think the trick is to stop thinking locally and start thinking globally. You know, there's 1,000 protests around the world, and there's a huge economies of scale there, and the enemy is globalized, so the attacks, the counterattacks must be globalized. You're not going to win a global assault with a local, you know, counterattack. So it's all in place. The communications networks are in place. We know what the strategies are. We know that buying silver decapitalizes the banks. We know that a global synchronized boycott of Coca-Cola could take down a major corporation and create 40,000 to 100,000 new jobs. But so it's just a matter of will. The people are not yet experiencing enough pain. But when the pain threshold gets to a certain level, either A, they get smart and do a strategic counterattack, or B, they try something that's not strategic and chaotic and sloppy, and you're going to end up with another peasant revolt where everyone gets slaughtered.
I think there's one thing people can do, which is if you go to yeastradio.com, there's a PayPal button. If you send me money.
What?
Then you can donate to me, and I will make sure and do the right thing forever.
Okay, wait.
Wow.
I have an important story
I gotta donate the yeast. But... holy shit. I didn't know that.
No. Okay, listen. Because we started with the fact that Ireland's going to tax things that aren't bread enough.
Damn.
This, I saw somebody tweeting this, and I thought it was a joke, but apparently it's not. Okay, the land where pizza is one of your five a day because it is covered in tomato paste. Yes, apparently Congress is now, the move has been derided as a, despite, Congress is saying that it's a vegetable. A school lunches bill going before Congress aims to reclassify pizza due to its tomato paste on the dough. So they're going to reclassify it as a vegetable and say that the subsidized school meals must include a certain amount of vegetables. So they're going to say this is a vegetable.
If I squirt tomato paste up my sphinx thing, it doesn't mean I'm getting an enema.
By the way, isn't it a fruit, actually?
Well, what about
actually it is, yeah.
What about old people in comas? Does that count?
Yeah, but
those are vegetables.
Those are vegetables.
I think that's part of the five food groups.
You can eat one of those.
I have.
No, but it's a fruit. That's against the
definitely.
Law.
Yep, it is.
Oh my God! See, our ignorance knows no bounds. So they can get away with this because people are ignorant and they don't know that tomato is a.
But doesn't that sound totally medieval and trivial? Like the king lord says, looking at the king on Thursdays at 2 p.m. is worth a £3 fine.
Yes.
Right. It's just totally trivial. Like they're running out of money and they're just stealing it. And at some point, the people snap and there's an insurrection and it's happening all over the world. And just
look at all those comments coming in.
The momentum is not going to end. It's the chicken is being cooked. It can't be uncooked. The insurrection is here and now it's happening.
Did these people know you're going to be live in about 10 minutes?
Actually, yeah, we should probably plug that.
Oh, yeah.
Given it's a Resonance fundraiser as well.
It's a Resonance fundraiser and it features Max Kaiser, stand-up rage Resonance. Financial firebrand Max Kaiser performs stand-up rage in an exclusive fundraising gig for Resonance FM. Kaiser presents a... What's that word?
Scimitar.
A scimitar, sharp critique of the 1% in the post-GC, GFC era of austerity on Saturday, November 19th, upstairs at the Old King's Head, London Bridge. Never short of an incendiary quote, Max takes things to the max from 8:30 p.m. It's £10 at the door, $5 concessions. If you have a bagel, it charges you £20 as part of the new bagel tax.
And, Johnny Trunk's DJing as well, apparently.
Oh, yeah, really? Yeah. Johnny Trunk. Trunk is DJing and he has heist music he's playing.
Oh, is he?
That's,
that's
some amazing copy. Who wrote that? That's like somebody, that's an American.
What, Max takes things to the max? You think that's amazing copy?
That word,
great American, where we think,
whatever,
we think pizza's a vegetable.
Scimitar.
Look up scimitar. What's it? This had to be Richard because he's the only one with a
pirate like pirate sword, isn't it?
It's
what pirates use, like a cutlass.
Scimitar. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's not. It's like the thing, the Soviet Union logo, isn't it?
It's a sickle.
It's a bit like a sickle.
We don't know. Why doesn't somebody tweet it
scimitar
on our
Ustream? Scimitar sharp critique. All right, now do it in Financial Fire Run. Max Kaiser performs Stand Up Rage in an exclusive fundraising gig for Resonance FM. Kaiser presents Scimitar Sharp Critique of the 1% in the post-GFC era of austerity on Saturday, November 19th, upstairs at the Old King's Head London Bridge. Never short of an incendiary quote, Max takes things to the max from 8:30 p.m. Entree, £10 at the door. £5 concession, only on Resonance 104.4. Exclusive.
Forgot to add about the bagel tax.
And you have 5 minutes to get there.
Wear a bagel in your Sphinx ring and get complete discount. We'll charge you £20.
That's right.
That's so coming up soon, isn't it? Well, what time?
You've got 4 minutes or so or thereabouts.
Oh, yeah, we have 4 minutes left. That's good.
Oh,
so the conclusion of the peasants. Madge, you got to read some of those comments. I see them coming in fast and furious.
Any chance the Republicans might draft Jeb Bush for the president? After all, and put him on a ticket with Liz Cheney, Bush Cheney in 2012 worked so well for the first time around.
Why not, Jeb?
That makes sense.
Jeb, sure.
For neo-feudal times.
He's untainted
times.
So far by this craziness that's been going on. You know, throw him in
times.
At the last minute. Okay, he could get a lot of support.
We need royal families.
Kevin something writes, if Max, if people really want to revolt, what about a dollar boycott?
Mm-hmm. Well, there already is a dollar boycott going on. The Chinese are dumping it. The Germans are dumping it. The Russians are dumping it. The Iranians are dumping it. People are dumping it.
Yep. There is a dollar boycott going on.
Make me want to make a poopy.
That's right.
Let's talk about dumping.
Madge, tell us some more. Come on, Madge. Put your prolapse back in and go on.
Yeah. Put your potato bug back up here.
I've read them all. I read them all.
No, sir. No, I mean, no, ma'am. You did not. Because look at all this.
You want me to read everything?
Yeah, because I see something about Giallo.
They're dumb.
You said, let's read
them. Not even questions.
Oh, I see. They're dumb.
Does it start at 8:30? If you sit down at the stand-up rage, do I get my money back?
Oh, my God.
You're right. Forget that.
Don't forget Kane's Pizza. Don't forget Kane's Pizza come with Game of Hide the Sausage for free. These are questions. This is what you want me to read?
This isn't Yeast Radio. This isn't Madge Weinstein show, you know?
I just happen to be in Google Reader and saw your post in your RSS feed. Is that a question? No. I'm giving $20, £20 to the door if I can get in. Okay.
That's nice.
£20? Wow.
That's good for residents.
Goes to residents.
Look for me. I'm wearing this. Give me $40. I'll make sure you get in.
No, that's
but
not
don't,
no Scottish
but
money.
No, no Scottish money. That's right, yes. Because Scotland is not part of the United Kingdom. Only on Resonance 104.4 FM do you hear that exclusive information. We learn from a taxi driver, and we know that taxi drivers always know everything.
Pizza equals veg. Stop Kane and the Koch brothers before it's too late.
The Koch brothers.
I know.
You just like to say crotch.
Zombie apocalypse. Thanks, guys. Jibo, they can start a little local.
Jibo. See, that's the way Madge says it is Jibo. No, I say Jibo. Max says Giabo.
Can I get from Moorgate to the old King's Head in 30 minutes?
Probably not on the Northern Line, no.
Can you do a I squish yo from kids in the hall? Your head? Oh, yeah, I did that earlier. You missed that.
Oh, right.
Oh, my God.
By the way, as the pub is a slightly obscure location, it might be an idea to just mention to people that. It's kind of like down a little alleyway. It's
well,
near
you're
London
mentioning
Bridge.
It now.
Oh, good. I am, yes. It's near London Bridge. It's on Borough High Street, but it's in a little sort of alleyway type courtyard type thing. Yeah. I think there's like a sort of shop selling posh paintings.
Somebody's
that aren't
just
very good
tweeted
there.
From no. the location. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get into the pub to see Max. I think there's a long line there.
Down there. Oh, you can visit theoldkingshead.uk.com if confused about the location. But yeah, it looks like you'll see the queue before you see anything else.
Is it old spelled like old English?
OLD, not with an E. No,
not with an E.
Ye olde.
Are these people all going to be stoned because they listen to this channel?
Yeah, most likely. Dropouts mostly, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
there's a lot of hair on around here.
You've got about 40 seconds, guys.
Oh, no.
Really?
All
right. 40
okay.
seconds?
Well, this has been fun. You know, it's been fun doing it live. We have to come back more often and do it. It's great. Thank you, Madge Weinstein, for coming and being... Yeah. Not coming. Yeah. For not coming.
Oh, I came six times. Max did, too. Because he was eating wasabi with sushi when he wasn't talking.
Oh, wait. Did I just hung up on Richard. Okay. And, Max, do you have final words to say to the people?
30 seconds.
Bye, y'all.
Oh,
that's your outro.
Okay, well, coming up next is Radia.